Hello, this is your Polycast for Wednesday, January 10th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, mayors pledge progress on racial disparities and salt in Shingle Creek. Minnesota Human Services Commissioner Emily Piper says her agency will fight the conditional release of a repeat sex offender. Tim Pugmire reports.
A judicial appeal panel this week approved the conditional release of 62-year-old Thomas Duval from the Minnesota Sex Offender Program, or MSOP, to a supervised facility. He's been locked up for 30 years following a series of rapes in the 1970s and 80s. The judges noted Duval's progress in treatment and compliance with program rules. Commissioner Piper, whose department oversees the MSOP, said in a statement that she plans to appeal. Piper said Duval poses an exceptional risk to public safety and should not be released. Duval was up for a conditional release 4 years ago, but he withdrew his petition. Governor Mark Dayton then halted all releases until improvements were made to the program. Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
The head of the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis says the risk of another banking crisis like the one in 2008 could be dramatically reduced if large banks were required to keep much larger reserves on hand. Mark Zedeklik reports.
Minneapolis Fed President Neil Kashkari says if financial institutions with assets exceeding $250 billion were required to hold significantly more capital than smaller banks, those big banks might be enticed to break apart, thereby reducing the risk of another banking crisis.
Several banks would probably realize it's in their own economic interest to, in a sense, split themselves up into smaller pieces so there's not so much concentration. But instead of the government making that decision for them, they could make the right business decision on how to maximize their own profitability.
Kashkari acknowledges the proposal to increase reserve requirements on big banks will not likely be embraced in the current Republican anti-regulatory political climate. Mark Zedeklik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
The Minneapolis School Board has voted to end the school year 2 days earlier than originally planned. Tim Nelson has more.
The board voted last night to end classes for students on Friday, June 8th this year. The change was a recommendation by Superintendent Ed Graff, citing student achievement data and staff and parent input. The state requires 165 days of instruction, and Minneapolis had been planning to offer 176 days for the 2017-2018 school year. The last days were scheduled for June 11th and 12th. The district said in a statement that staff noted a spike in absences last June, and hot days that month were difficult for students and staff in buildings that weren't air-conditioned. The shortened student year does not affect staff duty days, and the district says it's exploring how to accommodate families who were expecting their kids to be in classes those last 2 days. Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
The new mayors of Minneapolis and St. Paul have pledged to eliminate or reduce racial disparities. Jacob Frey and Melvin Carter are not the first Twin Cities mayors to make promises to bring more economic opportunity, and they will have to draw on any and all resources available to their cities to meet their goals. Brant Williams reports on Mayor Frey's efforts to end racial disparities.
On a bitterly cold early January morning, Mayor Jacob Frey watches as construction workers shape the inner skeleton of Thor Construction's new headquarters in North Minneapolis.
You said the third floor ending with the red, that's the office space?
Yep, so that is the first floor of office space.
Later this year, the Minnesota-based black-owned company's flagship building will stand four stories above the intersection of Plymouth and Penn Avenues. This part of the city used to be a thriving economic corridor. However, many businesses left following the upheaval of civil unrest along Plymouth Avenue in the late 1960s. The exodus of wealth and commerce from the area left an empty space large enough to accommodate Thor's 90,000-square-foot, $35 million building. Following the tour, Frey joined business leaders in a discussion on economic inclusion, which included a focus on racial disparities in North Minneapolis and other parts of the city. Frey says encouraging entrepreneurship and bringing companies to build and hire Northside residents is one way to address historic discrimination.
We've got some extraordinarily talented individuals and entrepreneurs that can do some amazing things here, and we need to make sure that every single bit of that talent is utilized so that the potential of North Minneapolis is ultimately realized.
Frey said it's time for city leaders to stop talking about creating jobs for people of color and to take action. However, some say by talking or using his bully pulpit, Mayor Fry can get results. Marika Pfefferkorn is with the Twin Cities Innovation Alliance, a nonprofit which helps secure financial support for entrepreneurs of color. She says companies respond well to public praise or criticism from the mayor.
It's highlighting what works, reinforcing what works, and then also going back to the other folks and holding them accountable to saying, this is our expectation of you. And with the roles and responsibility and the authority that I have as a mayor, this is how we will hold you accountable.
But some say Fry's promises may hurt him if he's unable to deliver. University of Minnesota professor of public policy Larry Jacobs says Fry has set high expectations. He says Fry and his counterpart in St. Paul, Melvin Carter, have to negotiate layers of government in order to secure funding and support for their agendas.
You've got county governments, which are very important and have quite a bit of control over federal money that comes into these regions. You've also got state government, including a legislature which is currently controlled by Republicans, and have shown themselves not to be entirely sympathetic to the metro area.
Jacobs says Fry will need support from a majority of the 13-member city council to help him pass the kind of ordinances he wants to enact. That includes the affordable housing ideas Fry campaigned on, such as focusing on preserving housing units instead of building new ones. The council also has the power to amend the budget he will present later this year. For now, it appears Fry and the city council are in their honeymoon phase. He praised council members during his inaugural speech, and council members later returned the compliments, saying they're more than ready to work with the new mayor. Brant Williams, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
50 Minnesota lakes and streams are now on the state's impaired waters list because of too much chloride, mainly from road salt. That can have widespread implications, everything from affecting reproduction of aquatic life to corroding infrastructure. Ultimately, it can lead to potential health problems for people. The first stream named to the list was Shingle Creek in the Twin Cities. As part of our ongoing coverage of water issues, Kirstie Marone looks at the effort to reduce salt use in the Shingle Creek watershed and the long-lasting damage road salt has left behind.
If you've ever driven I-94 in the Twin Cities, you've probably driven over Shingle Creek. The creek starts in Brooklyn Park and winds southeast to Minneapolis, where it joins the Mississippi River. It drains almost 45 square miles of dense urban area, crisscrossed with roads. Lots of roads. For the past 50 years or so, we've been using a lot of salt on those roads to melt ice and snow.
We've kind of brought this on ourselves a little bit because we have the capability to have very drivable roads in the winter.
Ed Matteson is an engineer for the Shingle Creek watershed.
The downside is because we can get salt very cheaply, and it's one of the things that keeps the roads clear, we tend to apply a lot of it.
2 decades ago, Shingle Creek was one of the first streams in Minnesota tested for chloride. Not surprisingly, levels were high enough to put the health of fish and aquatic life at risk. The vast majority of this chloride was attributed to road salt. The state required a 71% reduction in chloride, and cities in the watershed agreed to do their part. In Plymouth, that's included a big effort to cut back on road salt. I rode along with snowplow driver Steve Fornes as he cleared the streets of Plymouth after a messy snowstorm. His job has changed since he started 10 years ago. Now, screens inside the plow's cab give him detailed information about the outside conditions.
Get your air temperature and then road temperature, which is 10 degrees and 7 degrees. It mainly determines what product you're going to use, whether it's just straight salt with the brine or whether that's got the magnesium chloride.
But perhaps the biggest change is in Fornes himself. After training, he and other plow drivers are much more aware of the harmful effects of salt on the environment.
There are times you have to cheat a little bit just because of the conditions and the weather. But for the most part, it's reduced it, and everybody's aware of what they're doing more so than before.
Since 2009, the city has cut its salt use by more than half. But the amount of salt in the watershed hasn't gone down much at all. And that may be the single biggest lesson the Shingle Creek experience offers.
It's going to take a long time before we're actually going to start to see the levels of chloride come down in our water bodies.
That's Brooke Osselson with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. She says chloride seeps into the ground and into shallow groundwater. Depending on the soil, that salt can hang around for a long time.
And so there could be chloride from 5 years ago, 10 years ago, that we're still seeing kind of making its way to our water bodies through kind of subsurface flow.
Even if we quit using road salt today, it would take decades for that chloride to be flushed out of the system. So think of Shingle Creek as a cautionary tale for the rest of Minnesota's watersheds. As scientists test more Minnesota lakes and streams, they expect to find more with salty problems. Because it takes so long for watersheds to recover, scientists say the best solution is starting now to change old habits, like getting snowplow operator Steve Fornes and his colleagues to use less salt. But Fornes says getting drivers to change their expectations of dry roads is a tougher battle.
I think that there are some that are aware, but for the most part, no, they just want the roads cleared. It is a safety concern because people just don't slow down.
Those expectations have long-term consequences for the health of Shingle Creek and lakes and streams throughout Minnesota. Covering the environment, I'm Kirsty Marone, Minnesota Public Radio News, Plymouth.
And that's your Polycast for this Wednesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.